Hello, everybody. My name is Ivan Butler. I work for a Swiss penetration testing company located nearby of Zurich. If some of you guys meet me later, maybe in the hall, you can just call me Ivan. Ivan is in my mother tongue, Ivan, so E1, Ivan. I'd like to introduce my hypothesis for this talk, this SmartCard APU analysis talk. I have the hypothesis that software cannot protect software. So I've been asked a couple of months ago by a Swiss bank to analyze their SmartCard infrastructure. They were running a SmartCard for using encryption and signing and Windows domain logons. And so I've been asked to analyze the security impacts of the chosen techniques, and so that is more or less what this talk is based on. If you allow me to really introduce some of the basics of attacking a target, you might have seen that in other speeches as well, that you can either attack in client computers, which is quite popular if you've listened to many of the web application stuff, cross-site scripting, client infections, virus and Trojan horses, and stuff like this. You can either attack the transmission path in between. So Dan Kaminsky's DNS is, for example, an attack to reroute all traffic to the man in the middle. Or you can just attack the server infrastructure. To me, personally, I believe that the most promising target for the bad guys are the client computers, because they are under less control than the server infrastructure and the network. So there are many client infection strategies, as you know. You can just infect clients by emails or sending them to malicious websites, or when you're doing wireless LAN ROC access points. When we do a penetration test, we usually go to the website of the corporate, of the client, and we look for open jobs. And then we just compile a nice looking CV or an CD-ROM and or USB stick or any similar. And then once we send the CV to the client, and if the HR department who wants really to know the CV of the applicant, so they really open the CD-ROM or the stick or whatever and flush the Trojan, will start running. So I can say from my own experience that the success rate of attacking a client computer is more than 95%. And if you've been here yesterday, I estimate that you really trust in this statement. So what we need, or what the market needs, is some kind of trusted devices, because in this paradigm, you cannot trust the client computers anymore, because it's that easy to compromise them, either by one of the online compromise techniques or out of band techniques. So that's where the need for such tamper-proof secure devices comes from. I recently read an article, and he said that the smart card concept basically is a credit card with an embedded microchip. It's around 30 years old. You know, most of you have probably been around with smart cards the last couple of years. But today's engagement in security is driving companies and governments alike to take a fresh look at the same old ideas. And even Bill Gates, who mentioned in the RSA conference in 2006 that smart cards deployments introduce a new challenge, and that's why there is Microsoft Certificate Lifecycle Manager is in place. So if there are smart cards that will help us to have a more security, more privacy than just trusting in client computers, then the question arises, what attacks against smart cards exist? And that is exactly what I try to disclose today. Okay, we have now the same picture as before. We have the client network and server infrastructure, but now we have some sort of smart card reader. This is a very old one. And we have some sort of smart cards. You plug them into the reader, and this is, it doesn't matter if it's wireless or with USB cable or whatever, but this smart little device here should bring me the additional security a client computer cannot afford. Once I've been introduced, I've been asked to analyze the smart card lifecycle. You have certain problems. The problem is, how do we analyze the security model of a smart card, because it's all embedded and it's not that easy to find out what it's really going on. So from the all overall life cycle is, if you have a smart card producer who produces thousands, millions of smart cards, they are just naked smart cards. You can use them. So and at my bank, in my example, orders a certain set of smart cards. So the smart cards are delivered to the my bank, and my bank is then initializing this smart card. That means the bank itself deploys some sort of software and defines some policy for the smart card and loads all this stuff on the smart card. This step is called initialization. So we have the blue smart card, which is slightly different than from the producer smart card because it's already initialized. And then you will give this smart card to John Doe, in my example. He receives the smart card. It's still not personalized, if you like. There's no key and stuff on it that provide authenticity or confidentiality, any keys. So the guy who itself wants to personalize the smart card itself. And I will go through these steps in this talk. Okay. So let's start with the initialize phase. That's the phase where my bank receives the card. I have here one of the cards. This is a non-initialized card. I put the card into the smart card reader. I open a tool that helps me to initialize the card. I try click on connect. It's connected, but you can't see anything here. There's another tool around. It's called CMC Admin tool. Slightly different. If you connect here, it says, okay, the card is not personalized. Personalized means not initialized. Okay. So I take one of the cards again. Sorry, it's far. Go away. So connect. So now I have a card here. You can click on the personalized section if you're the security owner of the smart cards in my bank. I have prepared a profile called Black Hat, and you can just look at this profile, what it is about. It has a label, it has an initial user pin, it has an initial unlock pin. It has some, the user has to change the pin after the first usage. You can add the GINA support, that means Windows logon support to the smart card. You have some sort of keys here. And if you think of a smart card like a PC, this is like the BIOS PC or the administrative password you need to load software on a computer. So actually the provider has already some developer's key to play around with. And these are the keys we really need to personalize or to initialize the card. If you use the use diversified key set, that means that the tool itself will scramble the keys, and when the card got lost, you cannot reset the card, you cannot personalize it again. So my client has chosen to use the diversified key set, but store the diversified key set on his security module. And so once a client loses his card or he comes to work without his smart card, and the card is used, for example, to badge into the building or to authenticate at the system, that the SIP, this card issuing point, will just take out a new card, they will issue a new card, and once the guy comes back with his card, then with his original card, they can just re-personalize them again, and so they save $15 per card without losing everyone. Okay, this Black Hat profile has some advanced properties. You see that you can choose the key, the space, the private key space or the public space. You can enable or disable certain features of the card. And here is quite interesting, and I really like to mention out this one. You can either choose whether the card shall support generate keys on card or even not to generate keys on card. That's quite interesting because in a very secure context, you really want to make sure that the card itself generates the key. So you don't want that the keys are somewhere generated on a computer and then afterwards stored to the computer. So I make sure that I flag this generate key on card. Then I have certain PIN policy settings, minimum, maximum length and stuff, alphabetic stuff, you know that. Then you can choose the PIN attempts and unblocking strategies, or that's it. And then at the end, you have here the advanced settings. And this is quite interesting. You have actually from the talk before, you have heard that you're loading some sort of cartlets to the card. And this is the package EAD, ID, and this is the file, actually a file, and once you personalize the card, these files are then uploaded to the card. So we have a PKI applet that is more or less responsible for the whole cryptographic part. We have a Gina applet that's responsible for Windows logon. We have a PIN applet that is responsible for unlocking and locking and stuff like this. And we have some other applets that are important for the smart card. So after I have personalized, or the company, my bank, has set up their policy, they just personalize the card. Personalization will erase any certificates, keys, and everything on it because the card is really newly loaded with new software. So I press yes. And here at the very end here, you see that it will first delete the stuff which is on the card, delete the stuff. The card itself blinks a lot, and after everything is deleted, it starts uploading all the applets, the PKI applet, the Gina applet, and all the rest. So deleting takes a while. Now creating PKI applet instance. Once the applets are uploaded to the smart card, it's then then the cards are instantiated and then ready for use. Okay, personalization completed. This is a fresh card for John Doe. Now, I'm as a John Doe, I want to use this card with my certification authority. So I just open my Internet Explorer. I go to my certification authority. Let's say my name is Hacker10. This is the user interface of the web enrollment of the Microsoft Certification Authority. I choose the smart card reader and I choose the Excel to cryptographic service provider. I'll come to that later. So once I have chosen that I want to create keys on card and I have chosen the appropriate CSP, the cryptographic service provider, I just enter submit and I'll be asked for the PIN. Okay, I go back to the CofAdmin and I'll refresh what I can see here because it's quite interesting. This is a native tool from the vendor. It'll hopefully upload my profile. And now, oh no, it's in the generation request. It cannot do both together. So I should not have opened this. Okay. Ah, yeah, sure. Thank you. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. My fault. Yeah, it's blinking now. Seems like we're in. Okay, now what happened in the background? So the Internet Explorer asked my CSP to generate keys. Then the keys were generated on card. Then a ZSR, the certificate signing request, was generated, sent to the ZA. The certification authority automatically issued my certificate. Now it's ready to install. So I go to the tool again. Sorry for that. It has my PIN cached, that's why it doesn't ask for my PIN again. And as you can see here, we have some sort of identification numbers and public and private key. There's no certificate yet. Once I install the certificate here, everything got installed on the card. So my problem was, how can I do any sort of assessment what is going behind the scene? And I will try to give you an idea how I solved that puzzle. So now I refresh the card view and it should be a certificate on it. Okay, now everything's okay. I have a private key, a public key, and I have a certificate. I can view the certificate. It's not, has expired. Okay. I probably need to. That's why, because we have a timing issue here. So. This is the certificate authority. Okay. Okay. That was the step of initialization. So I just set up some software for the card. And afterwards, I personalized the card for John Doe or for Hacker 10 in my example. This was the software dialog you have seen, and that was mentioned in the talk before that you developed a cardlet using Java. Then you use your Java compiler to create your classes. Then, unfortunately, you can't use the classes directly for the smart card. You have to somehow convert them using a converter. And then you have the CAP or IGC files, which are then used to upload to the smart card. And one of you might ask yourself, yeah, if this is the process, why not programming a malicious PKI applet and replace that applet somewhere where the card is initialized, and then upload all the applets, the compromised applets, to the smart card, which is really feasible. I don't dig into that any further because I've been more focused in what an end user can do with a card. If the end user had any threats, instead of a very limited number of people who actually initialize a card. Okay, behind the scene, the communication in between the client computer and the smart cards is a protocol. It's named like APDU, Application Protocol Data Unit. And some of you guys have maybe used the terminal to a modem some years ago, and you have just typed in AT commands, ATZ, AT, DT, whatever. So you can roughly compare, you can really compare the AT command set with the APDU command set. So what they have in common, once you send an APDU command or an AT command, you will receive an immediate response. So it's like HTTP, one request, one response, like AT commands in a modem, one request and one response. But if you Google for APDU commands, you will really end up with very rare information because, yeah, okay, some of the smart card vendors have published their white papers about APDU commands. But if you really want to know what's going on in between the computer and the smart card, That's a tough task, and that's what I want to. So it doesn't matter whether you want to, if a CSP, a cryptographic service provider, or any other interface a smart card has, for example, PKTS-10, or whatever talks to the smart card, it will do it using the APDU command set. If I compare this, if Microsoft, if my Internet Explorer uses the smart card, there is the crypto API, a very abstract layer in Microsoft layering subsystem. If the Internet Explorer wants to generate keys, it will actually call a crypto API call, and the crypto API somehow identifies the CSP, which is responsible for the card. The CSP is delivered by the smart card vendor. It's actually a DLL. And once the DLL uses a WinSCART DLL, you can read that in many white papers. And the WinSCART DLL then will do the APDU commands to the card. So once you're faced with this very, let's say, simplified diagram, you can ask yourself, where would you try to hook into the communication the Internet Explorer would do with the smart card? You can either hook into the CSP, or you can either hook into the WinSCART DLL, and we'll see it now. So the APDU command set, this very weird command set, so at least to me has a command and a response structure. The command structure has some bytes for the classification, one byte, then the instruction, one byte, then the first and second parameter for one byte. You have the length that defines how long the command is for the APDU command. And you have a last flag that specifies the answer you're expecting from the APDU response. Nice to know, never seen that in live, also in real time. Then the response set itself has three areas. It has the data section, which is mostly, in most cases, null. You have the first and second status word, and they are named as just the status word. For example, hex 9000 stands for OK. So let's make a very animated example. I have here the PIN applet. The PIN is 8 times 0. So once you enter 8 times 0, something within the tool will send an APDU command. And you see here that these are 8 zeros in a hex hex form, and the response is just 90 and 00. This stands for OK. So that means this PIN seems to be valid. There are certain standards that define the APDU structures and everything. So there is the government state smart card interoperability specification, and we have other standards for the European MasterCard and Visa chip authentication program, or GSM. They all speak APDUs to their device. So if I follow the path of hooking into the CSP, I really need to know which CSP I should hook into. And you can really do that by a technique which is quite simple. I haven't seen that detail explained very detailed, so that's why I do it here. I have here a tool that can just do some raw talks to the smart card. And once you insert a smart card into the reader, the hardware layer will send an answer to reset, and the device will respond with a string, this answer to reset string. It's like here. And this answer to reset string is an identification which is used then to identify the appropriate CSP. Okay, now I'll do open the... I lost my Zoom meter. Okay, if you go dig into this registry, there is a registry key here. You can see it. It's a AK local machine software, Microsoft cryptographic, Gale smart cards. And in this registry key, you see all the installed smart card types on this computer, on this specific computer. And if you look here at the ATR, then zoom. Why doesn't zoom it? Okay, don't know. You have here the ATR string, and you, for example, we have a 3B65, and you compare that to my string, 3B75, that's not the correct value. And you dig into these strings, you see ATR, there are different strings. And at the end, it's only the first two bytes are important. These two first bytes identify the vendor. So we have the 3B75, and the 3B75 seems to be the correct. And then we have here the crypto provider. It's a string, Axalta cryptographic service provider. Then, additionally, there is another key set in the registry, and you have the providers, and here we have an exact match of the string mentioned in the ATR, and here you have the image path of the CSP. So that's the CSP which is responsible for my communication in between Internet Explorer and my smart card. If I really want to hook up something into the CSP, I really have to do it with this DLL, the Axalta CSP.dll. So that's more or less how you find out which CSP is responsible for your configuration. So now coming to the more interesting part. After I have introduced smart cards, the CSP structure, and a little bit give you some introduction in personalization and initialization, I have been asked myself how I would really attack a smart card infrastructure. So you can attack it on a client computer using Trojan horses. But I don't know if it makes a lot of sense if you use a Trojan horse on a computer, because the smart card tamper-proof device should give you additional security. So why should a Trojan being successful? So the next approach would be doing something in between the communication or on the smart card itself, which is called side channel attacks, and really recommend the Travis Goodspeed talk right after my talk here, who did some really interesting stuff. So that means how the smart card behaves on power loss, and if you have some on power on, and if you give more power and stuff like this. I don't dig into that. So the first thing, when you're just Googling around, you will find out that I was not the first person you're trying to find out what is going on in between the PC and the computer, and you can buy a smart card interface, an inspection interface. It's called Season 2. It's actually for the car industry, how they do this, the chip quality assurance using such a hardware interface. And if you plug this interface in between the smart card, so that means instead of inserting the real smart card, I just insert my hardware device, and then you have to wire some stuff to do your RS232 interface, and then you can more or less passively snoop what is going on in between the smart card and this device. Unfortunately, you cannot alter the command sets, so it was nice to find out what is going on, but it didn't really help me much. Then instead of really knowing the APD use commands, you can try to guess them. Because, even if you have the ISO standards and the APDU definitions, it seems that most of the APDUs are not ISO compatible. They seem to vendor specific. And because I haven't known the APDU commands at all, so I use this tool as well. I inject certain codes. And then this tool has some nice features. Unfortunately, it's unregistered. I licensed the software a month ago. They charged my credit card, but they forgot to send me the license key. So you have here an APDU scanner, and if you open the APDU scanner, it's like fuzzing. In my example, I know interesting would be from A4. To let's say AD, and if you specify, let's use the Oreo, it will fuzz the instruction part of the APDU command, and from A0 to AD, and that's just tip scan. Okay, and then you will see here. How the smart card sent the appropriate response. So this was my sent and recorded, so class not supported. And by doing some APDU, let's say fuzzing technique, you will maybe find out hidden APDU commands. Okay, that really helped not that much in my situation. So I came back to my initial thought that I could hijack the WinSCART DLL. The WinSCART DLL is a DLL that transforms commands into APDUs, and it's unique for any software that communicates with your smart card. So I've wrote a tool that just monitors the WinSCART DLL and sends the commands into a Java GUI where you can look at it, you can change the requests and responses and send it back. So it's some sort of command modification, response modification, and logging. These are the features, a very simple tool. But I found out that it works with the APDU Toolset Pro. It works if you work with a smart card with the CSP. It works if you do something with the PKTS number 10 with Firefox, or any other tool I have tried really works with the APDU live debugger. So let's have a look with the debugger. It has a configuration file here. These are different tools. It is capable of monitor. I have here I just change it to C. I have here the specification of the tool that has to be monitored. In my example, the Internet Explorer.exe. And there, just a name identification. Let's write back hat 2008. And I save this configuration file. Then I open the SmartCard APDU Live Debugger. Choose the process that the debugger should monitor. In my example, the Internet Explorer Black Hat 2008. And I start the server. Now the WinSCART DLL is hooked, and every request is sent to this GUI and afterwards sent back to the DLL and then wired to the smart card. So it's some sort of a proxy. Some of you know Paris or WebSCART proxy, which is capable of doing the same thing for web techniques. Here at the very end, you can edit command and edit response. I just leave it or unflag it because, yeah. Now let's do the same again. So first of all, I have to look at my smart card. What is on my smart card here? This card we have just in the first demonstration. So I clear the card. I clear everything which is on the card. But we have a clean and proper smart card. Takes only some seconds. Okay. And then I do the same thing again. So I go to my Internet Explorer. Go to, so let's say, another user, Hacker20, for example. Website found. And here we go. So I'll do that a little bit. You can see both windows. So here we are. As you can see, in the first time, at least to me, I was able to see what is really going on in between the client and the server. So I can see, okay, we have here some sort of command structures and response APDUs. We have very weird commands, 00 and 61 1A, and so this command here is actually just guesses I've put into the application. This is not somewhere looked up. So we have requests and responses all the time, and here we have the certification authority. So now I do the same thing again. I do the smart card user, I choose my Xalto cryptographic service provider, and I do personalization again. Yes, we really want you. And then, as you can see, we derive some APDU commands there on the top. So I ask myself, I have somehow to trust into the CSP. CSP, because how can I identify whether a certain key is created on card or just on a PC and then sent to the card? Because these are hidden secrets nobody knows. So I know now, okay, until here something must happen with generating key, generating the certificate signing request, and that's it. Once I press the install certificate button here, the rest here must mean that the certificate is loaded on the smart card, to the smart card. Okay, that's more or less the tool. I wasn't that happy with these results yet. So I decided to dig into the tool a little further, and I thought, okay, let's stop this session here. And I decided to find out, okay, if I connect to the card, I refresh now my card because now it's personalized, and I look at my card. I see Hacker20 is now issued. The card itself has a generate key on card. Okay, that means the APDU command that we have just seen was actually generated on the smart card. It's okay. I asked myself, okay, is in any cases and in any situation, do I really want that the keys are generated on the card? And I say, no, not in any case, because if you look at modern PKI infrastructures, you have a signing key and you have the encryption key. And usually the signing key is created on card and the encryption key is created in the PKI, because once the employee leaves the company, you won't be able to sign other documents or whatever, because the signing key is really unique. The signing key must be created on the card, but the encryption key for key recovery, once the employee leaves or whatever, and you have some encrypted files somewhere on your file server and you want to decrypt these files, you want to do key recovery for that certain key. So we have the need for keys that being created on a card, and we have the need for keys that being created in a on PC or on a CA. Okay, but this flag should really make sure that the keys are generated on the card. So I analyzed this application a little bit further. I do that again. So I go to the CMC admin tool. I enable it by just the correct here. Now I can also inspect what this tool does with the smart card. And then finally I found out. So I go to the CMC admin tool. I start the server. And I choose another card because then I can step over. It's also a no. Okay. Okay, this is also a generate on key card. And I leave that out because then I can step over until to the pin query. So here we are. I connect. So I have the pin. And now I add edit response, a stop button here. But I still enter my pin. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And something happened. Select application. Now the APDU is choosing my pin applet. Okay, that's all right. Now the pin is wired via APDU in plain text to the smart card. That's all right. And that's it. Let's do that again. So we have seen now the pin verification process, and now all the rest is being downloaded from the card into the GUI, so that we can see, okay, there is something and the card is generate keys on card. So I do a disconnect again. I stop the responses. I connect. Now I have to dig a little bit. So I say, okay, I don't want to modify this, I don't want to modify that, this is okay, 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 this is okay. It's a one. And then I somehow have seen this APDU request here, and I was comparing on-card and off-cards. And so I've seen that if you have an off card, so a card that supports key generation on a PC instead on a smart card, I've seen that here is a 0 instead of an 8. I just walk through. Okay, here we are. And the generate keys on card flag is not flagged anymore. What does that mean? That means that the smart card itself knows whether it's a smart card that supports G generation on card or it denies G generation on card. And if a Trojan horse can just manipulate this APDU response, I can make sure that everything what is done with the smart card or the whole key generation path will be on PC instead of the smart card. That's quite interesting, I think. So then, if you know this stuff, you can do something like this. You can. This is very old technique. You open a tool that is capable of hooking into different DLLs. So I this tool needs some monitoring files. So I monitor all the export functions of my xltcsp.dll. This is the DLL I have mentioned in the register query at the very beginning. And I do not want this computer to look up anything on the internet. I will parse the import section or the export. I'm quite interested in the export section of this DLL, and I press the generate key. Okay. Now I have all the export APIs of this specific DLL. I have the acquire context method. I have, what do we have more? I have create hash. Oops. We have quite interesting stuff. The CP gen key function and or get user key, get the RSA user key, and some more interesting stuff. So what I've done then, I open my Internet Explorer. Okay, here we go. Okay, I didn't, hang on a second. I must have started my APDU debugger first. That's the Internet Explorer is configured. Okay. I start my APDU debugger here. I choose the Internet Explorer again. I leave it like this. And I open my Internet Explorer. I must be nervous. I haven't started, sorry. So I have to start it, sorry. Let's say this time I'm Hacker 12. Now this tool will stop the request. So let's do the same thing again. Oh, okay, sorry for that. What's going on here? Echo 13, password, now send. Now I'm being more careful. So here we are. I type in, we know it's on card card, so I fake it now in the APDU command, and so the rest is okay. And I have my certificate template here, smart card. I use my Axalta provider. Okay, that's all right. Now, before I have just, you have seen this monitoring file. You can actually, I have prepared this again here, including the parameters. So this is a slightly, it's mostly identical. Just we have to see all the DLLs from the Axalta CSP here listed. And what I can do now, I can open my APDU tool, and I hook this tool to the Internet Explorer. I start hooking any DLL that is used by the Internet Explorer, and you see here eExplorer successfully hooked. I load my monitoring file. The monitoring file is this file the tool should monitor. And additionally, with this tool, you become an API for actually programming the everything here, and you become an API, and if you use this API, so the tool is from Jacqueline Potier from France, and I have just chosen to hook the CP gen key, the CP export key, and the CP get user key DLL functions using the hooking tool from Frankie. And here it's the interesting time. It will load the library. So this is the original library. And at the very end here, it's not very spectacular. I just send out the message box before CP gen key method. That's the high level API that generates the key, the asymmetric key. Then I do the key generation, and then I have another message box that appears once the key is generated. So you use this software that really helps me to find out when exactly the generate key function is called. That really results in a DLL, and you can add this DLL to this tool. Release, this is a DLL, and I hook this DLL into the tool as well. So that means once these three DLLs I have just hooked are used, instead of the original DLL, my fake DLL will be used. Okay, now we have quite a lot of tools up here on my desktop. Let's start with now generating the keys. I press here submit. Now I have to enter the PIN again. Oh, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Okay, this window appears because I have hooked the function. And now that's interesting. I know from here to until the next windows appear, these are the APDU commands that are used to somehow create the keys on the card or on the PC. I don't know really. So I somehow remember this address. You can just copy it, open a notepad, and let's say store it, this string. And then I say, okay, this is before the G generation method. Then the G's are generated by the CSP. And this is the dialogue after. So I remember this message too. And we know now all APDUs here in between must somehow be involved into the G-check generation process. That's what we know for now. Okay. And that's it. Then everything here is hooked. You can look in the tool and you see how in an API point of view, that the acquired context, you can look up these in the MSDN library and find out, okay, that's more or less what the programmer will do, who is not aware of the APDU commands. And then at the end, you have the installed certificate, and you clearly can now monitor everything there. So by doing this research, I found out that there are some ISO-specific APDU commands. Let's say the 00 are ISO-specific. We have some encrypted stuff, and we have non-encrypted stuff. And we have some vendor-specific stuff, which you really won't find anywhere in a documentation if you Google around. And I personally summarize it that you have here APDU instruction. If the second byte is a B0, it's a read instruction. If it's a D6, it's a write instruction. And here, more interesting, if you see 0D2, or it's a generate keys on smart card, or C012 is a generate keys on PC. Or in this, when I did this analysis was slightly a different smart card. On this card, it would be the 2028 or 2022 2.0 instruction. So it really depends on the smart card. So that's what I found out about this off-card or on-card key generation using the live debugger, really dealing with this stop and try and error approach. And now I found out, okay, if the key generate keys on card is not enforced, you can actually hook the CSP, and this results in the following attack vector. The CSP asks the card for on card or off card key generation because the card itself knows the status. So the APU intercepts the response and says, okay, I'm an off-card cheek generation card. The CSP will then perform the cheek generation functions within the computer, and the CSP will then send the CSR, the certificate signing request, to the CA, to the certification authority. After all, the certificate and the key material will be stored on the computer or on the smart card. And the hacker who did all the man-in-the-middle stuff knows all the keying and certification details. Trust is lost. This is more or less such an attack vector in UML sequence diagram. It's in a graphical form, the text from the slide before. And my personal conclusion is, does a smart card make you really independent from any computer the smart card is attached to? Absolutely 100% independent? I say no, not absolutely independent. You cannot use your smart card at any computer, even if the smart card should provide the security you want on a compromised computer, because that's what the smart card is for. So, but I don't think that the smart card can be used in any situation. So the flag generate keys on card does still allow key material being stored on the card. That's because of the key recovery and signing key and encryption key. I don't think this is a vendor vulnerability. It's not a zero day, if you like. It's just by design. And this demonstration was solely related to the power an end user of a smart card has. So I was slightly demonstrating everything with my smart card and the CA. So if the SIP, the card issuing point, or the computer that initializes the smart card is compromised, even more fraud can occur. Let's think about the rock applets or fake PKI applets that can be stored on a smart card, or the master key set that can be sent to others, which is the BIOS password or whatever. The PIN itself has been seen in plain text, not only within the APDU commands. It has been seen in memory. So if you do process explorer stuff like this, and you're hunting around within the memory context of these tools, you will find out the PIN unencrypted in the memory segment. What that means, if the PIN can be gathered in plain text from the memory segment, then Trojan horses can use the smart card behind the scene and just doing some cryptographic functions. I'm more or less at the end of my talk. I really thank you for attending this talk. It was a pleasure to be here. If we do like to announce some sort of war game, a 2 days to 4 days war game in Switzerland in Q1 2009. It's called Swiss Cyberstorm 2. If one of you guys will show up there, it would be a pleasure to have you doing war games and stuff like this. Thank you very much.
I just wanted to ask or even comment, there's a difference between the attack that you showed, which relates to what happens when I initialize a smart card on an untrusted computer, than when I work with it. So the problems you were talking about, really, if I try to initialize my keys or generate keys on a computer that's not trusted, if I'm just working with a smart card, then there's still danger, but it's somewhat less, I would argue.
Yeah, that's correct. I mentioned my attacks work for if you re-keying the smart card, your re-personalization, but once the card is personalized, you're fine.
Great talk. I have one question for you. The hooking technique that you are using assumes that the user that's actually executing that is a local administrator of the machine, right? If you had a limited user that was not a local administrator, would they be able to do the same attack?
That's correct, yeah.
Limited users would be able to do this as well? Or let me ask you more simply. Does this require administrative rights to be able to accomplish this, to be able to hook into the DLL as you did?
Yeah, you need administrative privileges.
Correct.
That's right, yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah. Any hooking on DLLs and stuff needs administrative privileges, but I assume that some of the hackers who want to really do that stuff, they have that.
Quick question. Other than typical client-side protection, is there any other defense against this type of attack? Other than your typical client-side protection mechanisms, personal firewalls and other protections to prevent against the Trojans and whatnot, are there any other protection mechanisms that you have identified?
No, not really, no. Right. No, I just want to mention out that if you personalize your card, it's quite important that you make sure that it's on a trusted computer, not on a compromised computer. If you can ensure this situation, you can't do that in any case and situation, because you want the users to really create their keys by themselves. You don't want them to go to a SIP, to the issuing point. You want they. If I'm traveling around and I'm in, let's say in Las Vegas, and I lost my card, so I really want to use to do it where I am, not going back to Switzerland to the SIP and stuff. Yeah. Thank you.
I have a question for you. Trust is lost in your scenario because we were able to download private keying material to the card when the card thought it was not supposed to generate it on the card.
Correct.
Do you think that is something that is because of the way you initialize the card, maybe PKCS10 support or something, is also only the CyberFlex card? Would the CryptoFlex card prevent that?
It's how I was personalizing the card. It's because of that. I mean, if, for example, the my bank who initialized the card would store some sort of keys already pre-installed on the card, they could ensure that all the crypto stuff is made there. So, yeah, that's correct, yeah.